Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the Hornets 24/7 Trade Extravaganza Show. The Hornets completed a 1-3 week leading up to the trade deadline that's coming this next week. We'll talk a little bit about the week that we saw, and then we're going to break into all of the trades that various readers have suggested to us, our own particular trades we like. And also this week we're joined by the man who does Dealer Dell, and that is James Grayson. James, how are you doing?
Hi, fellas. How are you?
Doing good, James. Wondering if you saw the suggestion on the site of possibly tweaking the name of your article from Doing Dealer Dell. A reader pointed out that might have a little adult video connotation.
Oh, I think it's got a double meaning on that, but I guess that's just my sense of humor. But always open to suggestions.
Yeah, hopefully Dealer Dell will be doing other GMs in that context.
Oh, yes.
All right, so 1-3 week, as Ryan stated, win against the Mavs, losses against Indiana, Toronto, which was somewhat of a shocker, and Chicago, a game that the Hornets, were right there until the end. Give me some thoughts of just the week in general, things that stood out to either of you guys.
I know Jason Calmes is excited to see Dallas get crushed, and I can't say I disagree. Yeah, I mean, Dallas, I just can't, I've never been able to take them seriously for like 4 years. Like all last year, all during the playoffs, I was like, Dallas, they're going to get killed by this next team. And then earlier in this year, oh, they're finished. And we beat them again. I just don't. Every time I watch them, it just gets reinforced that Dallas shouldn't be that great, but somehow they are that great. What's going on here?
And how about, I mean, I think the standout from that game was Xavier Henry.
Yeah.
James, you've done some of our Young Pups pieces. Either of you guys, do you see that game as more of a fluke, or is this a sign of things to come from a guy who's still younger than a lot of the guys who are going to be in the upcoming draft class?
Well, I mean, I think that, first of all, I mean, Henry hasn't really had any time to play or any extended minutes. And I think it was either you, Michael, or Ryan that said that he's always looking over his shoulder to see whether he's going to get pulled out of the game. And I think that was the first game, because Ariza was out, that he actually had an opportunity to sort of find his way on the floor. He's never really had that opportunity. So I think, first of all the people that were saying that, you know, oh, this is, you know, he's our sixth man of the future are probably a little bit off base, need to calm it down a bit. But he's definitely a player that has a future in this league just because he knows how to play the NBA game by drawing lots of fouls.
Yeah, I mean, he had a really good shooting night that night too. It wasn't just him hitting the glass and getting fouls too. I mean, he is a strong rebounder for a guard, but I have yet to see any real belief, any reason to think that he's going to be an amazing shooter. His shot takes a long time to set up.
Mm-hmm.
When he catches it, he really has to set himself, and then it shoots forward. He's got a thrusting instead of like a clean shooting motion. So I mean, I think that he can be a shooter, but he's not going to be like somebody you can go to hit things off of picks like Mark, the amazing Marco Bellinelli, who's been running off of multiple picks and drilling everything. Just wow. I mean, Marco is clearly the shooting guard of the future for the next 10 years, right?
A little bit of target. I mean, I was kind of struck in that game. I agree, Ryan. I don't know even with time that Henry could become a knockdown shooter, but one of my favorite Hornets players, and obviously the story didn't end well, but one of my favorite Hornets players of all time is Bobby Fields, and he was just a physical specimen as a shooting guard. Wasn't really reliable from the outside, but he was just built like a tank. And I mean, Henry basically came out of college already built that way, and you could imagine him even putting on another 10 to 12 pounds in muscle and really just being that physical two guard. Can you see him possibly moving in that direction and just being a beast in the interior for some of the other slighter shooting guards to handle?
I think that when you look at Henry, when you try and sort of look at it from his perspective, he doesn't even sort of know exactly where he fits into the picture. I think someone said that, you know, they mentioned that could he possibly be a backup three? He's a little bit short, but he is a physical player, and I think if you give it a bit of time, he definitely could be that role. I just think that he can draw fouls at an astonishing rate at the moment, but I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not he can sort of put that together.
So the ultimate question, which would you rather have, Xavier Henry? Or that second-round pick we sent out to get him?
I would take Henry, but I'm saying I would go the unconventional route. If I could give him one thing to work on this offseason, it would be a post-up game. I know people would probably say outside shooting, but to me, you have a lot of these teams going to these two combo guard lineups, the Hornets have a 6'3 shooting guard of the future on their roster in Eric Gordon. You look at the Warriors, they have two 6'3 guys in their backcourt. You have a lot of these smaller shooting guards coming into the league that are more slight. I put Henry on the block and just make him that kind of player. I really think he has a potential as a power shooting guard.
I agree, and I hope.
I would tell him to work on his right hand before he works on his post game.
That's true.
But if you put him in the post, he doesn't have to use his dribble as much. I think it neutralizes all of his weaknesses.
It is. I have never seen. I mean, people said this on broadcasts. We've said this. I have never seen a guy who has so many moves to start his dribble that are all designed to allow him to go one direction.
Yeah.
He's got, like, spin moves, jab steps. He's got all kinds of things just so he can start his drive going left, which is crazy.
I agree, but, I mean, it was nice to see one good game. And before this turns into the Xavier Henry podcast, other thing from the week, I know, Ryan, you said it right before we got on the podcast. You really thought that the Hornets had that Bulls game wrapped up. What did you see in that game? Were the Hornets playing at their peak? Were the Bulls a little lackadaisical, a little bit of both? You know, what did you come out of that game thinking?
Well, I think it's just like every single game we end up watching. The Hornets, they never stop. The players that they have, they're all hungry. They all want to prove that they belong in this league, that they belong in a starting lineup, though many of them don't. I think the Bulls came into that a little bit like, oh, they're injured, you know, they're not going to do that much. And the Hornets hit them. And they finally, I mean, the Bulls started getting serious near the end, and their defense locked in. I mean, and the Hornets paid for it in the end. But, I mean, this is the NBA. If you're giving, you're spotting the other team a little bit of room, and then you make a run and you think, oh, well, we put them away, and you let up again, you're going to get smacked, especially if you have Kyle Korver on the floor who can't guard a back cut. I mean, Bellinelli was treating him like a traffic cone. It was embarrassing. And, of course, everything changed as soon as Ronnie Brewer came in. But, yeah, I mean, I loved every minute of that game, and I thought they had it at the very end. I thought that little four-point cushion, they were going to be able to seal the deal. But, I mean, that Bulls defense is a pretty amazing thing when it locks in.
Yeah. Yeah, and James, you're pretty infamous on Twitter for openly rooting for Hornets losses in close games. Can't say I blame you. I mean, the ping pong balls are tempting, but watching or looking back at that Chicago game, is there any part of you that thinks that this team is close enough that in the off season, if perhaps the Hornets don't get that number one pick in Anthony Davis, that this team might want to explore going the veteran route by trading its picks and looking at certain trades and free agents?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely something to consider, but it would also be dependent on what type of veterans that you could get for that pick. I'm very high on a number of the prospects, you know, Robinson, Sullinger, a few other guys. And I know that it's a power forward heavy draft, particularly towards the top end. I've always sort of believed that building, you know, through the draft is the way to go. But you know, with Eric Gordon, if you can find the right piece to go with him, definitely. But it's just my personal opinion that, you know, we go through the draft, even if, you know, because it is. What a lot of people say, heavily stacked draft towards the top end. So, I mean, that's just my opinion. That's probably why I'm rooting so hard for them to lose.
All right. Anything else? Anybody have anything else about this week that stood out before we move on to what we came here to discuss?
No.
I had one thing. It's a small thing. I just sort of noticed, particularly in the Indiana game, the rebounding, we just got absolutely dominated. But more particularly, Gustavo Ayon, he defensive rebounding sort of, he's taken a little, since that Cleveland game, he's sort of, I don't know, taken a little bit of a drop off. It's only a small thing that I noticed, but he, I don't know, something about it, he just sort of doesn't sort of go after the rebound. He's sort of tired. I can't really put my finger on it, but it was just something that I noticed in the Indiana and Raptor games as well.
Yeah, I think that Ione is suffering from two things at this point. We saw this is kind of like with Jason Smith, you know, previous year. A, he's actually entering some people's scouting reports. So, I mean, they are knowing that look for this guy to back cut you all the time. It doesn't help you because people fall asleep. That's why back cuts work. But I honestly think he is getting tired. I mean, he's playing pretty long minutes and, I mean, sometimes he works so hard. I think this compressed season is not doing him any favors. And like, I mean, this was a four games and five nights thing. Mm. So it's not surprising that, you know, on that fifth night in the fourth game that in Indiana, people look tired.
Yeah.
Especially with nine people dressing.
Ion was a little bit down that game, but real quick, what do you guys think of Solomon Jones? I mean, had a really solid week. Guy's on a 10-day contract. I would be utterly shocked if the Hornets didn't sign him for the rest of the year. Is this a guy who possibly could be a fifth big for the Hornets? I mean, he's at least as good as DJ Banga was was last year for the Hornets, isn't he? I mean, is this a guy that has any kind of future on the team?
If he can keep sticking that mid-range shot, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can.
Yeah, I mean, that too, but he's also, he seems very physical, and yeah. I think, I mean, it's as simple as that. He definitely deserves to be on the team. That's what Monty said, so definitely give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, he sets what I call cackle picks, because he sets up these horrid, in the open court, these solid, bone-jarring picks where he just crushes the guards from the other team because they have no idea he's there, and I just cackle. I love it.
All right, so that's the week that was. Now on to the trade extravaganza. We have dozens of reader-submitted trades. We'll try to get to as many of them as possible. Also our own trades, also examining some national trades that were thrown out there. But first, I'd like to get kind of the overall theme from each of you as far as what your philosophies, priorities, overall things that you would have in mind right now if you're Dell Demps. I guess James, since this is something that you've been tackling as of late, getting inside Dell Demps, if you would kind of start, what are some of the overarching philosophies you have or would have if you were Dell Demps as this trade deadline approaches?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about it before the podcast began. I think that Dell can sit back and take calls and, you know, pile together the offers. I think that there's obviously he wants draft picks, exceptions if he can get them, expiring contracts if he can get them, young players. You're not going to get all of those things. But I think probably one of the things that might be surprising is he might not actually do too much just because he actually does have a lot of expiring contracts already. He's got Kamen, he's got Landry. I think it's $20 million right there in expiring contracts. So, I mean, he's got expirings at the moment. Obviously, we'd like to see him add a few firsts, but I think his philosophy probably is flexibility. I think that's probably the overarching thing for Dell heading into this trade deadline.
If you could do one or the other, which would rank higher on your priorities list? If I were to say either acquiring C-plus level future assets, like, you know, a first round pick in the late 20s, or shedding contracts and creating more flexibility, shedding some of our bigger veteran contracts, which of those two things would rank higher for you?
Personally, draft picks, just because I think if you can accumulate a lot of them, it gives you more sort of ability to maybe package those at a later date. But that's, I guess, my preference. I could definitely see him going the other way, but I would take the draft picks.
All right, and Ryan, for you, how does your list of priorities look as you head into the deadline?
Getting anything for the expiring contracts that we have on our team. So, I mean, Landry and Kamen are not going to draw amazing offers, in my opinion. You might get okay ones from some teams that are, you know, seeking to do something in the playoffs. But honestly, if the trade deadline passes and we have both Landry and Kamen still on this team, I'll see it as a failure. I mean, at least one of those guys should be traded for anything. And when I say anything, I mean, I don't care if it's even like an early second round pick or a really late first round pick. Just move them out, get whatever you can from, because there is no reason to have them this summer. We're not going to be re-signing Landry or Kamen most likely because we have a bunch of young bigs. We got Okafor. We've got these, you know, we got a high draft pick in a draft that's purely power forward center kind of material. I don't see any value in having Kamen or Landry still on the roster past the deadline.
And what if the only way that you could really get something for them is if another team said, okay, well, you got to take on some future money. So whatever, I'm the Celtics and I want Kamen. But in order for me to give you our first round pick or the Clippers first round pick, you got to take on somebody like Brandon Bass, who has a couple years left on his deal.
I mean, I think you've expressed this before, which is, I mean, we're going to be players in free agency after we've reestablished the team for a couple years. Like, when we can prove that, yeah, we have some really good players on our team, we have a chance of making the playoffs, and hey, free agents that are pretty decent, we can spend some money on you and bring you in. It's not next year. So if you have to bring on the contract that covers next year too, or maybe even the year after that, I'm not really, I mean, as long as they're not like crippling $10 million contracts, if it's like $3 or $4 million, I'm fine with it.
James, you were going to say something?
I think Ryan sort of hit the nail on the head there. I mean, personally, when we look at the trade deadline, I think you're always going to have to give up something like that. I mean, if you want to get, you know, draft picks like a Boston draft pick, you know, they might throw in a contract that might be a little bit longer, you know, 3 years or whatever. I'm just nervous that, you know, after this season, if we have a lot of cap room, that we're going to make some dumb Drew Gooden signing that's going to kill us for the next 4 years. I think that's the thing you want to avoid heading forward. But yeah, that's just me.
I think we should trade everything we have for Villanueva and Ben Gordon.
Yeah, Detroit model. Before we get into that, I mean, just real quick, my philosophies have a lot of them, mostly pretty crazy, but I think the two central ones are getting as many assets as possible to find a way when June comes to get two top six picks. I think the Hornets pick will definitely be in the top six. I still believe that Minnesota will be somewhere between 11 and 14. I think, you know, whether it's getting trade exceptions that you could take on a bad contract with, other first-round picks, other young players, whatever, getting as many of those assets to package them together to possibly get a second top six pick. And then my number one priority, in all honesty, would be finding a way to unload Emeka Okafor. I just think that as this new, what pretty much is going to be a hard cap, comes in, you know, you just can't be paying marginal players that much money. And I just think the Hornets greatly increase the flexibility if they could get Okafor off the roster. He's really not doing any good on the team right now as it rebuilds. So those are kind of my top two philosophy as this deadline comes up.
Yeah, and you'll see that. I mean, I didn't do, when I bring up the trades that I thought of, I didn't do a lot of what can I get for Chris Kamen or can I get from Carl Landry. I thought of what can I do to get rid of some of the long-term veterans on this team for something young and expiring. And you'll see that. So two of mine are actually revolving around the trades for Okafor, which you said never could happen and will never happen. I'll just, you know, point
no, that. Will never happen as you're trying to get Derek Williams for him in an old podcast. But
last summer, I thought it was possible.
All right. Well, let's start off with a warm up. This one is a pretty poor trade proposal. So we'll get our warm up in and get all the cobwebs out on this. We had a poster on Hornets Report. Not making fun of you, buddy. You know, it was at least a try, but he proposed that the Hornets give up Chris Kamen and the Minnesota pick for James Harden, Nazi Muhammad, Cole Aldrich, and Ivy. I guess let's just start off for pointing out to our readers why this is an example of a bad trade idea.
Oklahoma City would never do that for a million years.
But Kamen's averaging 19 and 10 over the last five games.
On 19 shots.
Top five center.
So let me just put it this way. I mean, maybe they don't know how good Harden is. They haven't watched him enough. But Harden is quite possibly already the second or third best shooting guard in the entire Western Conference. And possibly he's already in the top five in the league. I mean, Harden is a beast. And if you think you can, I mean, it'd be like, you know, a comparable trade would Eric Gordon for Harden, and with Gordon's current history, there's no way in hell OKC is doing that.
Yeah. Anything to add, James?
Not really. I think Ryan covered it there.
All right. So so let's go national first before we go on to some of our readers who actually had some good ideas. ESPN had a basic, you know, they did some 5-on-5 stuff this week. They also did trade proposals for each division. Hornets came up a couple of times in those. Two of them actually involving Golden State. One of them had Monte Ellis straight up for Emeka Okafor. The other one, Monte for Chris Kaman. I guess whoever wants to jump in, take the Hornets' point of view, and the other one take Golden State. But either of these trades interest either of you?
Well, I mean, I'll take the Hornets' perspective. I don't know why, with Eric Gordon as a restricted free agent, we would want Monte Ellis, who is essentially the same player without any defense. I think it's as simple as that. I don't know why you would... I mean, obviously you give up a long contract, but you're getting one back as well. And it just doesn't sort of fit. It's not really the jigsaw that I would sort of be putting together.
And I'll take Golden State, which, by the way, this is just the reported way Golden State views Monte Ellis. So this is how they would take this trade request. We're supposed to trade Monte Ellis, who's better than Stephen Curry and who we would not trade straight up for Andre Iguodala, for Emeka Okafor or Chris Kaman? Are you fucking kidding me?
you don't think any chance with Okafor? I mean, we have Malone, who left the Hornets this year to go there, obviously. Mark Jackson's trying to bring in more of a defensive-minded culture. The contracts are somewhat similar. You hear that you would always trade a small for a big. You don't think there's any way Golden State pulls the trigger on that one?
So in my actual opinion, I don't think it's that far off in terms of talent, because I'm really down on Monte Ellis just in general. I mean, he's one of those guys who you know, does the 24 points on 22 shots a game and who is an awful defender. So I actually don't think Okafor and Ellis have that far apart. As far as impact on a game. But from every piece of information I've got about Golden State, they view Monte Ellis as a legitimate, you know, top 20 guy in the NBA because he can score 25 points a game, which, I mean, it's batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Because there are other things you need to do besides, you know, throw the ball at the hoop 25 times in the game. But I just don't see this ever could happen. And exactly what James says, I don't see how it makes sense for us.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's something there. If Golden State does sour on him a bit, I think there could be something there to where a third team could get in the mix. I mean, Orlando loves Monte Ellis. You know, essentially Hornets make that trade, ship Monte over to Orlando, and, you know, Hornets pick up some pieces. It's kind of playing the middleman from that perspective. But yeah, straight up, I don't really see how either of those two teams do that. The final ESPN trade was actually in the fixing the Hornets piece. Anton Jameson and the Cavs 2012 unprotected first rounder for Chris Kaman.
I'll take the Cavs. The
Hornets. I'll give that a 10 and take that right away. either of you guys think that the Cavs even consider that trade?
I think the Cavs would laugh at you, hang up the phone. I don't know what else they would do because they're going to be in the lottery most likely, even though Kyrie Irving's playing a rookie of the year type of season. I just think that... Because Jameson is in an expiring contract as well, so I guess it doesn't make sense from that perspective. And they're giving up a first round pick. It just, yeah. I mean, even if they could convince Kaman to be a center for the future, I just don't think it makes any sense.
I mean, the only way I could possibly see this make sense at all is if they suddenly make a run, and over the next week, and they, you know, win out, and suddenly they're within, you know, three games of hitting the playoffs, and they think that's really important to them. But I mean, even in that situation, I would expect that we would have to swap something else, like give them a young player or two in it. Like maybe we'd have to throw in Aminu and yes. Xavier Henry or Vasquez in order to get their first round pick.
Yeah, but even that, I mean, would the Hornets say no if you switched out that Cavs first rounder for one of those Miami Heat first rounders? The Hornets would say yes to that, right?
I'd say yes. I'd still say yes.
Right.
I'd say.
Why would the Cavs ever have to even entertain? I mean, those top eight Eastern playoff positions are set. You don't know in what order, but it's pretty clear what eight teams are getting in. I don't know. I wanted to shoot down that one because I don't want our readers to be disappointed when the Hornets get much less than that for Kamen, as if this was a real possibility in the first place.
And when they land Monte Ellis for Kamen, we could all rejoice.
And you guys, just to be clear, you don't think there's any way, since both guys could handle the ball, that Monte and Gordon could possibly, work together as a tandem?
I mean, they could work just as well as Steph Curry and Monte Ellis are right now.
Mm.
But
how well is that?
I don't think that works well. So.
Yeah.
I don't think. I mean, they could coexist, but I just think that they're, in terms of their offensive game style, they're just too similar a player. And also, it doesn't make sense. Monty Williams wants defenders or guys that can at least give effort. He doesn't want a guy who's just interested about getting his 25 points and moving on to the next game.
Yeah, I agree, but something was kind of surprising when I was there at All-Star Weekend. Monty was talking to a couple of people, and I was around, and he quite candidly said that he was absolutely crushed when the Hornets didn't get Kevin Martin. When they were talking about the trade with the Lakers, he was by far and away the apple of Monty's eye, absolutely dying for an offensive player who could create his own scoring, create his own points. And I understand they have that with Gordon now. But yeah, to me, Monte is, I don't know, maybe he creates a little bit of leverage for them if Gordon's gone. Or I just think that at the end of the day, Monte's a guy that if it doesn't work out or Gordon does sign the extension, you'll always be able to move him for. I mean, his name comes up in trade rumors all the time. You're going to be able to get something from him down the line, even if it doesn't work out.
Right. So what about that other national column?
Yeah, tell us about that one.
Chris Sheridan. Chris Sheridan, who everybody who reads the blog must have really good feelings towards. Actually, if this trade he suggested goes through, they might actually have good feelings towards him. It was the Philadelphia 76ers trading the Hornets Spencer Hawes, Andres Nocioni, Batty, and their first rounder for Chris Kamen. So, James, you're the Hornets, and they call you up and say they want to do that. How quick does your answer come back?
I would rate it a 10 out of 10, and I would say let's meet over lunch, and I'll take you out to lunch. I'll do whatever you want. Come down to New Orleans, take you out for a night on the town. I'll do anything I possibly could to get that trade to go through.
It's almost like Chris Sheridan hasn't watched what Spencer Hawes has been doing this year.
No, not at all.
I mean, if you had the opportunity to trade, salaries aside, say salaries don't exist, it doesn't matter. Hawes, Kamen, those are your two guys to pick from. Which one are you taking?
Oh, jeez. Oh, Kamen. I gotta love Chewbacca, but ooh.
I mean, it's just what the hell? And people are gonna read that and be like, "Oh, that's what Kamen's worth."
Yeah, I mean, I do think they're the only beneficial thing there from Philly's point of view is they get Nocioni off the books a year early, but that's not worth a first round pick. I mean, yeah, they basically get to clear $7.5 million from next year, and they're not faced with the decision on Hawes. I mean, I'll throw it back at you, Ryan. So Hawes is a free agent after the Hornets make that trade next year. What what kind of contract do you think that he's worth? What would be the highest he would match?
After the way he's playing this year, I mean, it's really hard because he's been injured too, so you don't know if that was going to continue. But I mean, after watching Marc Gasol get a max contract, I mean, you're probably looking at least $10 million a year. You're looking at a Cayman-sized contract. But, I mean, that doesn't make that trade any better. I mean, honestly, they could probably call up the Hornets and say, here, take Nocioni, take Petit, and take this other filler contract that's completely worthless that expires this year, and we'll give our first rounder, and you give us Cayman. And the Hornets are probably doing that. Cayman goes off they get that money off of Nocioni. Cayman goes off the cap, and then they could sign Hawes. I mean, there's nothing that makes sense there.
Yeah. So your prediction before we move on from this, next summer, who gets the bigger contract between Hawes and Cayman, and is it a sizable difference?
Total max dollars or per year? That's the question. I think Cayman will probably make about the same amount per year as Hawes does. But I think Hawes will have a longer contract.
Okay.
I think it'll be interesting to see what whether Cayman's contract will be a David West similar type contract. Short term but lots of money kind of contract. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if a team did that because he's 30 years old now, or he's 29 or 39. Oh, sorry, 30. But I wouldn't be surprised if someone gave him a 2-year. 10 plus contract type of thing.
All right. So those are some of the national ones. Now let's go on to some of our readers. Interesting one here. This guy's name has popped up a couple of times just because he has some roots in the New Orleans area. DJ Augustine. Christian, I hope I don't blow up this last name. Christian Anthonies. Sorry, Christian, if I got that wrong. He proposes Corey Maggette, who has, I think 1 year after this year on his contract, DJ Augustine, who's going to be a restricted free agent this year, for two of the Hornets vets, Trevor Ariza and Jarrett Jack. Either one of you guys take either team. Give me your idea on that trade.
I'll take the Bobcats, I guess. I think with the Bobcats, I mean, you have to assume that they're, you're the top three pick. And Ariza is 26 years old. He's having a pretty decent year, as is Jarrett Jack. And Jarrett, I mean, I think that if I was the Bobcats, I would probably pull the trigger on this because, I mean, I'd probably give it an 8 or something like that for the Bobcats just because, I mean, Maggette's contract is like $10 million or something a year. Ariza's is a manageable contract, so is Jarrett Jack's. I mean, if I was the Bobcats, I'd definitely do it.
And I'll take the Hornets. I don't see... So the only thing that I see that the Hornets gain out of this is they shed Ariza and Jack a year earlier, essentially. I don't consider DJ Augustin one of the top 15 point guards in the league. I don't even consider him probably not even to be in the top 25. I mean, his number probably is around 25 for me. So trading Ariza and Jack to basically get Augustin, because Maggette's there just to fill in the filler and expire after next year. I just don't see a reason why DJ Augustin is enough for you to want to trade both Ariza and Jack, because Ariza and Jack are decent veterans. And they're not, they don't have unmanageable. I'd consider it. I'd have to really evaluate DJ again. I'd, probably give it like a 5.
Yeah, and that's something I didn't mention in my philosophies, but if I'm Dealer Demps, one of the guys that I'm really looking on to hold on to unless I get blown away is Jarrett Jack, because, okay, let's say the Hornets do make that trade. Who is the leader on that team, from a player perspective?
Vasquez.
Yeah. I mean, you really don't have any veterans who are, who speak up. I mean, Okafor, is not really a verbal leader. Jack obviously plays that role, and I know some people are kind of upset with his chucking mentality, even though I didn't hear anybody complaining after the Dallas game.
But yeah, that's a guy that just for that veteran presence would be hard for me to give up, especially if the veteran I'm getting back in the trade is Corey Maggette. But George Christophe, actually, sticking with Bobcats and Hornets, and if you guys want to stay in your prospective GM roles, comes up with a much more bold trade. He says, how about Charlotte offers Kemba Walker, their first-round pick from this past year, Gerald Henderson, and give the Hornets the option to swap first-round picks for essentially two of the big parts of the Chris Paul trade, Eric Gordon and Al-Farouq Aminu. I guess, Ryan, we'll start with you first. If Charlotte calls you up, do you entertain that trade?
All right, so when I read this, I was actually moderately confused. Is it the Hornets getting the option to swap first-round picks, or is Charlotte getting the option? I would assume it's the Hornets.
Yeah, all right, well, let's go with the Hornets get the option to swap.
Because otherwise it's, you know,
I'm reading it.
Two lesser players for... Yeah, anyways, okay. How are you reading it?
I'm reading it. The Bobcats get the option because it's Kemba, Gerald, Henderson... and option to swap first round picks for Eric Gordon. I mean,
I think I'm going to go on the assumption as arbitrator here. I'm going to go on the assumption that that's because that would be way too much. That trade wouldn't be worth discussing. But
well, here's just real quick, evaluate it from the Hornets' point of view. Gordon's better than Walker. Al-Farouq Aminu is probably a little worse than Henderson. Maybe a little bit more than a little, but Eric Gordon is way better than Kemba Walker. So if the Bobcats want the right, I'm saying no. If the Hornets want the right, I'm saying hell yes, probably. So when are we making this trade?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the question.
If it's after the lottery, I mean, basically, the entire question revolves around Anthony Davis.
Oh, no, this is March 14th. You got to decide on pulling this trigger in the next 24 hours or not. I'm not giving you up until the lottery.
So it's just the option to swap.
Right, but essentially you have now your balls and Charlotte's balls.
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Okay.
I would pull that. I would increase my chances at Anthony Davis by 25% and trade Walker for Gordon, essentially.
Well, as Rick Cho said in his Seattle Sonics Oklahoma City days, he didn't explicitly say it, but he sort of said it under his breath that they were really, as soon as, you know, they sort of were moving on from those playoff days, they were really moving towards a tanking sort of situation. So, I mean, I would do anything I could to get Anthony Davis, and if I sort of lessened my chances by giving the Hornets an option to swap for a first-round pick, then I probably wouldn't do it. But if it was in my favor to get Anthony Davis and get Eric Gordon, I'd do it every time.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
Yeah, because Charlotte essentially forfeits Anthony Davis in that scenario. There's no way. Yeah, but then again, you know, if they get the third pick and New Orleans gets the fourth or vice versa and it's really not much of a difference, you're essentially getting Gordon for Kemba Walker, which I think is a trade you make every time. So, I mean, that's where you got to decide to gamble, but I thought that was an interesting trade.
Very good trade proposal, I think.
Yeah, I don't think a GM would have the balls to pull the trigger on that. I mean, that's just one of the things that gets you fired, you know, even if it's a good trade. But if you lose out on Anthony Davis, that's something that your fan base will never let you forget. So just the chance of that happening, I don't think that they ever pull the trigger. All right, I guess we could start getting into the Rondo stuff. I mean, I'll kind of go over some of our fan trades and the trades that we had submitted. We could kind of discuss them all, but I mean, in general, I know Rondo's been a hot name on the rumor wire. Do you believe, just percentage chance, what percentage chance do you think Rondo gets moved before the trade deadline?
Oh, goodness, that's a tough one. It's interesting. I said it in the De La Dell Volume 2 that the Celtics into the media were saying all the right things in terms of we're never getting rid of him, we're never getting rid of him. And then, you know, a couple of hours later I went on and saw, you know, more Mr. and Mrs. sources pronounced that, you know, Rondo is very much on the table. If I had to put a percentage on it, I would probably say 30 or 40 just to be overestimated, I guess.
And what do you think makes those percentages go up in the next week and a half? What makes them go down? Is it more on the court or off the court stuff?
Yeah, I guess it would be more on the court stuff, just because the Celtics, I think, are at a crossroads in terms of where they want to head in the next couple of years. I mean, if they can win it now, or if they can have it, I mean, Petras just declared, I think today, that they're going to win the title this year, which I thought was funny.
I love when, like, the ninth man on the team thinks he's Joe Namath. Like, Joe Namath had, you know, had some control in that game. Petras has nothing.
Come on now. French sharpshooter. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, it's one of those things. I think Boston are struggling with it themselves. You know, but it's just one of those things. You know, if you trade Rondo and you don't get back good value with a fan base like the Celtics, you're going to hear it for a long time.
Although, you know, they did trade Perkins for Green, and Green was not a good selection.
Yeah, but I mean, at least in that situation, Celtics fans knew that there was no way the Celtics could sign Perkins the following year. Rondo's under contract. You can't use that excuse.
A good value contract as well, by the way.
Yeah. So, Ryan, you're saying lower percent? I mean, what's your percentage on whether or not he gets traded?
I mean, so the only reason why I can ever see Rondo being traded, period, is if his relationship with Doc Rivers is as bad as people are suggesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, if you're going to look either direction, if you want them to compete this year, why are you going to trade your best player? Are you going to get back enough? I mean, they have a big four. So they have four slots filled on the floor. Unless you're getting back a center, you're not going to be replacing anything, any major minutes. You know what I mean?
Right.
So trading Rondo now, I mean, maybe you get back a little bit more depth, but depth doesn't matter in the playoffs. So trading Rondo for the future, I mean, Rondo is extremely young. He's one of the best point guards in the league. Unless you think you're going to be able to get Anthony Davis, I mean, that's pretty much the only kind of offers I could see, you know, luring Boston into trading Rondo is, hey, you know, we're the Bobcats and we'll give you our first round pick for him. And I mean, name a bottom five team in this league who's willing to give up their first round pick for Rajon Rondo other than the Hornets. I mean, the Bobcats aren't going to do it because they're so far away, Rondo's not going to help them. The Wizards have John Wall, so they're probably not going to do it because that's their best position already. I mean, who's the other team in the bottom right there? I'm having a mind blank all of a sudden.
You got, like, Toronto.
Right, the Raptors. I mean, the Raptors, I could maybe see the Raptors doing. I didn't think about them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they'd have to trade Calderon and their first-round pick for Rondo.
Right.
But the Raptors aren't going to suddenly make the playoffs because of that.
Right, and even if that was the case, I mean, if that's what Boston does want, why not just wait until the offseason and see what you could get out?
Do it on draft night.
I agree. And side plot, I don't know why it took so long for me to think about this, but I'm watching the Duke-North Carolina game last night. Do you think would Doc Rivers put that kind of pressure on his son of moving up in the first round and targeting Austin Rivers? I mean, honestly, in and of itself, I think I have that guy rated higher than most others do. I think he could kind of be a poor man's Russell Westbrook in some way. I don't know. I think he could be an electric scorer at the very least, a top-level six man. But I think that could be an interesting subplot of what the Celtics kind of look for in the offseason if they look to trade for Rondo. I mean, do you think it's possible that we could see a father coaching his son next year?
It's possible. I think it would be an awful idea. I think that's putting way too much to make Austin Rivers the savior of the Celtics. That's what he'd have to be. That'd be brutal.
It'd be,
I don't think he's up to it either.
Oh, it'd be so crazy. I think Linsanity would have definitely a... It'd just be as crazy as Linsanity of the Sun coach. Oh, that'd be, a bit crazy. It could happen, but, never know.
So, Ryan, right now, I mean, you said that it kind of could be what the Celtics are looking for. I'm the Hornets. You're Danny Ainge. I come to you and I say, I need to know this now before I start setting the course of my direction. I'll give you Carl Landry and our first round pick, but I will have it top one protected. If it falls anywhere else, you get the pick. I have a top one protected for Rondo. And I guess, I would give you Minnie's pick and my pick next year if it was number one, whatever. We'll work that out. But that's the baseline of the deal. What do you say if you're Danny Ainge?
If I'm Danny Ainge?
Yeah, you get a player for this year in Landry. He'll be back and healthy, give you an inside presence, and I'm giving you that first rounder top one protected.
I guess it depends on how I feel about Andre Drummond. a lot of people are down on Rondo. I still think Rondo is one of the best point guards in the game, and I would turn that down. But I would not want the number one protection on it.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm going for Anthony Davis or bust in every situation here.
Well, that's interesting. Ryan brings that up. James, where do you put Rondo in kind of this? I mean, it's a golden age for point guards. Where does Rondo fall as far as your point guard pyramid?
It's got nothing to do with him as a player. I don't like his personality, but that's just me. But, I think in terms of point guard and the position, he plays it as well as anyone else. He's a great defender. He finds his teammates like no one else, like Chris Paul, like Steve Nash. He can do it as well as those guys. And I think Rohan from At The Hive said that he's actually shooting from 18 to 25 feet. He's shooting 40%, and Chris Paul is shooting 43%, which isn't that big of a difference when you think about it. So, I think I rate Rondo right up there in the top five point guards in the league. I really do think he's a top five point guard in the league.
There's only three point guards I would take over him.
Name them.
Rose, Paul, and Darren Williams.
So Westbrook and Rondo, you take Rondo right now.
I would probably take Rondo he's got an edge on Westbrook for me.
Over Jeremy Lin.
Oh, damn. I forgot about him.
Oh, I'm insane. I'm Lin-sane.
You completely blown my mind.
Okay, so what about for the next 10 years, current contract included, Rondo or Ricky Rubio?
I think Rondo's going to be a better player than Rubio.
Kyrie Irving, who's on a rookie contract.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think Rondo's a better player right this moment, but Irving can be in the top five.
And
so,
be playing for Australia as well, just letting you guys know.
That's right, he was born there.
all right, one last. Okay, so you reject that trade because you don't want the top one protection, even though I think Thomas Robinson and a rookie contract for Rondo is not a horrible deal. But anyway, I counter and say, okay, well then let's go for the present and the future. I offer you Eric Gordon and Emeka Okafor. So you get your center to plug that other hole for Rondo, Jermaine O'Neal, and that Clippers first rounder. Are you more interested or less interested in that trade? Either of you.
Get Okafor's contract off the books. Eric Gordon, I mean, you sort of swap Eric Gordon for Rondo, which is, I think, is on par. You take on O'Neal, Clippers first. It's a kind of a wash. I mean, I think it's a trade that could definitely happen, because if you're not satisfied that you could re-sign Gordon, even though I think it's stupid because he's a restricted free agent. It's a trade that you would, if I was Demps, I would consider it just because of the Okafor thing, because of the hard cap coming in a few years. I definitely would consider it.
Yeah, I have the same feeling.
From Boston's perspective, Ryan?
From Boston's perspective, I mean, their only issue is they have no point guard at all anymore.
Right.
I mean, they'd have to do something else to find a point guard.
Yeah, and I mean, there's guys like Ramon Sessions that could be had for a song, and I think you could get a patchwork guy, and then by all accounts, I know we've heard this for forever now, but Gordon should be back in April, so that's a pretty nice guy to be coming off the bench behind Ray Allen and Paul Pierce.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, you could also consider Ray Allen for somebody.
Right.
I'm not saying that's a great idea for them, but I mean, it's definitely, as far as they're concerned, if their reason is that Rondo is just, he's not manageable by Doc Rivers anymore, then they should be pulling that trigger immediately. Mm. I mean, that's a good trade for them, I think. But if, you know, Rondo is, he's just a pain in the ass, and he's starting to irritate people, and that's why they're talking about moving him, then no, I mean, I don't think that's something that they should pursue.
All right, pretty interesting here. We obviously didn't talk about the trades that we were thinking about before we did this podcast. We had just kind of all threw them in a Google Doc. And James, it looks like you and I both had at least one similar target. It's been said that Roddy Bubois Dallas is looking to move him for several reasons. One, he's just not working on the court, which Hornets fans can't believe after they saw him throw up anything and hit the other night.
Right.
But that was an aberration. Really hasn't made any progress since 2 years ago. They also want to get him off the books because they're looking to make a run at either Dwight or Darren. I know people think they could make a run at both, but it's just financially impossible. But want to get some contracts off the books. James, you were offering up some trades with Dallas essentially getting Okafor, so they go the other route and actually take on a center. I would assume that your goal would be for them to get Darren Williams in free agency and just give up on Dwight. But your deal's basically centered around Jason Kidd as an expiring contract and Bubois with Dallas bringing in Emeka Okafor.
The first trade that I did, I realized didn't work just because Dallas sent their pick to the Lakers. So I decided that I still wanted to work around that framework. So the Hornets would get Jason Kidd, Bobois, Portland's first, I think if they still have it. Then Dallas gets Okafor and Felton. Felton's got an expiring contract. And then Portland gets Jason Terry and Trevor Ariza. So I think the reason, I mean, I'll throw it back to you guys because it is my trade. I'll throw it to you guys, you know, from each perspective, who does it and who doesn't.
I guess, the other teams, Dallas and Portland. If I'm Portland, I guess it's kind of a cop-out, but I would do this trade based on other parts that I can move. I mean, if I still have Batum and and Gerald Wallace, et cetera, I don't know where I could fit Ariza in. If I move Wallace, as has been reported in other possible deals, then I'm more likely to do it. And the same thing with Jamal Crawford. I mean, Jamal Crawford is a guy that supposedly Portland's getting a lot of calls for. Obviously, having him and Terry on the same team would be a little redundant. So I think if Portland could make some other moves first, that's a strong possibility. As far as Dallas, I think that without really saying it, they've kind of somewhat given up on the season, and I don't know if they're the team to take on Emeka's contract unless they believe that Darren Williams is a done deal, and then you go into the future with Darren, Emeka, and Dirk taking up the majority of your cap. you know, I don't know if they could win with that. So I would say Portland more likely to do it than Dallas. Dallas would maybe do it if they kind of had a backdoor assurance from Darren Williams' people. Ryan, how about you with New Orleans? Do you do that if you're the Hornets?
Yes, quickly. I mean, Roddy Bobois in return for Emeka Okafor, even if you have to lose a reason in the process. I mean, Roddy is overrated, in my opinion, because he's had some amazing games and a couple stretches where between his injuries that were really nice, and they focus on that. I think he's more of a Lou Williams kind of guy up in Philadelphia, a guy who may even have the potential to lead your team in scoring off the bench, but he has defensive deficiencies and he doesn't do anything else well enough that you could really have him be, you know, a star on your team. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, getting rid of Okafor should be one of the number one things this team is doing. So if it costs you Ariza to get rid of Okafor and you get Bobois back, I mean, even if that Portland first isn't thrown in there, I might do it anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of salary to get off your books. I kind of went, again, I just think Dallas sees future cap room as their high priority, but I think they still want to win this year as much as they can without taking on future salary. They're pissed off with Odom, kind of playing games with them. So I said trade Landry for Odom, essentially. Buy out Lamar Odom. You know, he wants out of there and to go pick his own team. And then for the Hornets' troubles, they get Roddy Bobois and the rights to, I don't know how many Hornets fans know him, but Nick Calathes. Calathes, quick story. As I've said multiple times, I used to play a lot with Chandler Parsons. Well, Nick Calathes was his teammate, and I didn't play with him as much, but when they were both seniors in high school and before they went to Florida, Calathes was by far and away the better prospect, was a much better player at UF, was a first-round pick. I mean, bottom line, Chandler Parsons is starting right now for a playoff team, and Calathes is a far better player, just kind of sitting over in, I believe, Greece it is right now. Grab his rights, Roddy Bobois, and the Mavs get their one-year backup power forward in Landry. And you know Cuban loves him because all he did was bitch about him when the Hornets got him last year. So whoever wants to take either team on that side, go ahead.
So I will go ahead and take Dallas. I would say no, and then I'd counter with Sean Marion. And I would throw in every draft pick I own for the next 72 years, because if I can get you to take Sean Marion off my hands, then I can make a serious run at Dwight Howard and your buddy Darren Williams.
It's just not possible. I wish I could show you. I mean, it's just financially not possible with cap. I mean, both of those guys would have to take pretty big pay cuts. But okay, maybe you think you could get them to take pay cuts. But so Sean Marion?
So I'm offering you Sean Marion, Roddy Bobois, if you want him, that Jones kid.
Dominique
Jones. Dominique Jones. Nick Calathes. Calathes, whatever you call
just
his name.
Just pronounce everything exactly how it's spelled. I love it. I absolutely love it. DJ Augustin. No, it's
Augustin. Right. Maggetti. Maggetti.
I mean, did you have some lasagna for dinner tonight?
You're not funny.
So I guess, you have been countered, James. So I guess the original trade is no longer on the table. You've got to take on Marion's extra years in order to get all those young prospects. What do you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, just sure Marion. I mean, unless he's planning on retiring anytime soon, I don't know. I mean, look, listen, it's a lot of it's dependent on what you want to do as a team. If you want to get draft picks and you feel like, you know, you can get young and just sort of bite the bullet with a certain player, then you do it. But yeah, I would hesitate just because yes, there's an ownership transfer, but I just think it's also you want to sort of have your books clean for the future. But I mean, yeah, it depends how many draft picks. But I wouldn't do it. That'd just be my personal.
Good response. I would say no too.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
I'd say no to myself.
I think you could move Sean Marion in the offseason for basically not. I think you could move him for an expiring contract. So at the end of the day, you're just taking on an extra year. I think somebody will want Sean Marion down the line. I don't think you'll have to hold on to his contract forever. But
so you would do it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and if for anything else, I'm telling you, Nick Calathes, the fact that when he comes over, you're going to have 4 to 5 years on a rookie contract for a guy who today I would take over Vasquez without even thinking about it.
So that's the end of the first part of our trade extravaganza. Just go down the page and click on the second part to hear all the rest of our wonderful trade ideas, including trades that send Okafor out of New Orleans. Let's have a ball, Tom Rooney, each and every day.